Atheist Nomads, episode 442. Where did priestly celibacy come from?
The podcast you're about to listen to includes cursing and talking about hoo-haws. Please be advised.
Welcome to another episode of Atheist Nomads. I am Dustin, and joining me is Lauren.
Hello.
And this is the second to the last episode under the Atheist Nomads name. So the plan at this point, be one more episode next week, hopefully released on Thursday. And then the next episode will be the first episode of Humanist Take on the World, and that will be on February 7th.
All right, new podcast. Pew, pew, pew.
Again,
well, not really new podcast, but a rebranding.
Rebranding and changing back to every other week. And I say back to because the first 60 or so episodes of Atheist Nomads was every other week.
Yeah.
Granted, those were nearly 2 hours long.
Yeah.
And the new every other week won't be.
Yeah. we could barely handle 40 minutes.
And the goal with that, again, is just to provide effectively triple the research and preparation time. With 2 weeks instead of one. That starts off doubling it, but not recording and editing adds even more time.
Yay.
Like doubles it almost again. So it will.
Of course, it helps that you've automated a lot of that.
Yes.
Recently.
Yes.
So.
But not the research and creative stuff. So this will give you more time for the creative stuff without putting in more time on the not creative stuff. So this week's topic is good evidence that I am doing a good job of reading less news that makes me mad, because it's a story Lauren saw that I didn't that made her kind of mad.
Oh, God, the Pope one?
Yep.
Yeah. It didn't make me mad so much as just cringe.
And
cringe.
Yeah. So the Pope's New Year's address covered a lot of topics. One of them was selfishness.
The one that made the headlines.
The most headlines.
Yeah.
Everybody covered it. He said, quote, "We see that people do not want to have children or just one and no more." And I believe that's pronounced one and done. Back to what he said. "And many, many couples do not have children because they do not want to, or they just have one, but they have two dogs, two cats. Yes, dogs and cats take the place of children. Yes, it's funny, I understand, but it's the reality, and this denial of fatherhood or motherhood diminishes us. It takes away our humanity, and in this way, civilization becomes aged and without humanity, because it loses the richness of fatherhood and motherhood, and our homeland suffers as it does not have children," said the old white celibate man with no children. Allegedly celibate.
Allegedly
man
celibate man.
Allegedly
no, they'd
no
much
children.
Rather fuck children. But no, it's like people who choose to have dogs and cats instead of children are selfish. It's like, wow, this coming from a church that is known for having every other kind of sex, hiding it. And you're going to tell us that we're being selfish for only having one kid and multiple pets, or
well,
having no kids.
Well, clearly that's selfish, because who are the priests going to fuck if there aren't enough children?
They need to start fucking dogs, apparently. Oh, poor dogs.
Oh, man. So, but yes, this brought up a question from Lauren. Where did the whole priestly celibacy come from?
Right, because a lot of problems with the Catholic Church would probably be solved if they allowed priests to marry and have sex.
Well, allow them to have
marital,
consensual
sex
with adults. That should be implied, but to make sure it's emphatic.
Yeah.
So it's and I was very disappointed in myself and the way I answered it, because I gave Lauren a very quick, terrible answer, thought about it more, gave her a better answer, and then I decided to really dig in and make sure that,
like a tick,
what I learned in college many, many years ago,
in a rather biased college.
Yeah, was right. The basic answer I had learned in school was that the Catholic Church doesn't let priests marry because of the Middle Ages, because the church had a lot of land and bishops were effectively princes or dukes with lots of land, and they did not, the kings and actual princes and dukes did not want those to become hereditary and have additional dynasties from a that are part of a separate international organization that's hereditary.
Yeah. Makes sense. But there's a lot more to it than that.
And it's probably absolutely true. But not completely. So if we go back into history. In the New Testament records, some of which should probably be taken with very large grains of salt, Peter was married.
Okay.
His mother-in-law is specifically mentioned in the Gospels. It is very clear that Peter was married. It is assumed that none of the other disciples were married.
Bunch of single guys following Jesus around.
Who is also was single. Why was he single?
Allegedly.
Because they don't say he wasn't.
Don't ask, don't tell.
And Paul made a very big deal in many of his letters about how he was single and how everybody else should be too.
Okay. TMI from Paul.
The big rationale he gave for that is because Jesus is going to come. Well,
that's what she said.
Armageddon is going to come in a few years. And when you have to run for the hills, it's going to be a lot easier if you don't have small children or a pregnant wife.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It has nothing to do with the suffering of those of the pregnant wife or children. It's about who's going to slow you down as you escape.
Oh, there was also a, you don't want to be a pregnant woman fleeing persecution.
Yeah.
So that was the big, well, one of the big angles he went. The other one was, well, you should be, if you are single, then you can devote all of your time and effort and intention and everything to the church and God's cause. Whereas if you're married, you're going to be.
You have to split your love.
Having to split your love and.
Was that King Lear? Where it was the daughter replied to her father saying, I cannot love you with my whole heart, for I have to reserve some for my future husband. And he threw her out.
Oh.
I think that was King Lear.
Okay.
And is that same thought where you only have so much love to give. You can't love more than one thing. No, that's just fucked up.
Where that is reasonable, though, is if you're expecting somebody to give 100% of their time, they can't do that while raising a family.
Even though people have done it.
100% of their time.
Okay, well, yeah.
Like this.
Nobody gives 100%.
He was wanting people to drop everything and move around and be itinerant preachers and
yeah,
not have any distractions.
Okay.
So we then know that in the next several generations, the early church fathers, including the bishops of Rome, i.e. the popes, in the 2nd and 3rd centuries, they were all married and all had children.
Okay.
The Gnostics were a sect bringing in Neoplatonic concepts, and the predominant form of Gnosticism was celibate.
I'm not really surprised by that.
They were the ascetic Gnostics. They would self-flagellate. Beat themselves with whips. They would fast for ridiculously long periods of time. And they believed that flesh and the material world is evil and the spiritual world is perfect. And if you have children, then you are creating
more evil.
More evil.
Okay.
The libertine Gnostics had the same basic principle, but with orgies. And if anyone in their group got pregnant, they'd do an abortion, grind up the fetus, and eat it.
Okay, that's fucked up.
To make sure that they, you know, they destroyed the matter that they had created from their orgies.
Okay, well, that's, yeah. Some problems there.
Yeah, yeah.
They didn't last long.
No, they were eventually hunted down and forced to convert to standard Christianity or be killed.
Yeah.
With that forced conversion, a whole lot of Gnosticism got merged in.
Okay. Okay.
And asceticism was a big part of it.
What's that?
The denying self as much as possible.
Oh, okay.
The
taking November a little further.
Yeah. Monks would have arisen out of that, where you would have people who would pledge their life to full, unencumbered service of the church.
Sorry, cumbered. Come. Made
me laugh. While leaving the church to go to monasteries and do nothing but beat themselves and, you know, not have any women around to tempt them.
Yeah. What was their purpose? It's more like just a commune for people to be miserable with in.
The idea was they could go and pray continuously. And so you'd have your prayer warriors hold up in the monastery to help strengthen the people out in the cities. And
yeah, we'll see how well that worked out.
There are still monasteries.
I know. At least the good ones brew beer.
Yeah. Well, they got bored.
Not really denying oneself when you brew beer.
Mm-hmm. So, by 306, there was a council that met and decided that, no, obviously, priests, bishops, popes, they can't be, like, if they're married, they can't be still be having sex with their spouse. Because in 1 Timothy, the rules to be a bishop is, you can only be the husband of one wife, and you must both be chaste, and so must your children.
How do you have children?
Well, that's where that phrasing has been.
That's the one that's been
thoroughly debated, and there have been two schools of thought as to what that means.
Okay. That's ought to be good.
The school of thought that this one council came to was, no, that means they can't have sex at all. And like their children, if they had children, you know, so ideally the bishop should not be married. If the bishop is married, he should probably move out of the house.
Of course.
And if they have any children, the children need to go to monasteries or convents.
Literally a convent.
That was, I believe, 306, if I remember correctly.
Okay. What was the other interpretation?
The one they came to at the Council of Nicaea in 325.
It didn't even go 20 years. And they're like, nope.
Oh, that was that earlier council was a minor council that meant nothing. Nicaea was a general synod that set doctrine for all of Christianity.
Oh, the one that mattered.
Yes.
Okay.
They debated it back and forth, and a celibate bishop that was there got up and said, this is insane. If a priest is married, let him continue to have sex with his wife. What is wrong with you people? But he can't become a bishop.
You gotta draw the line somewhere.
And so by that point, it was determined priest could be married, and married priests could continue to have sex with their wives.
Yay!
Bishops must be celibate and cannot be married.
Okay, so if you want to climb the ladder of the church, you better not get married or be a widower.
Yep. So in the...
Or murder your wife.
In the Orthodox...
Sorry, sweetie. Gotta climb that corporate ladder.
In both the Oriental Orthodox and Standard Orthodox, standard is in Greek or Greek associated.
Okay.
In those churches, they have continued to do things the way they have done them. They even reaffirmed it at the Council of Constantinople in 600 that married men can become priests,
but not bishops.
but not bishops.
Okay. I mean, widowed, I almost get that.
Married men who are priests who are then widowed can become bishops. But standard practice in those churches is monks become bishops, not priests.
Okay. So you get the fast track.
So most...
the bishophood.
Most Orthodox, Oriental, or in communion with the ecumenical patriarch, or Russian, most of the parish priests are married before they are ordained. Once they are ordained, they are not allowed to get married. So if you are single when you get ordained, you have to continue to be single. If you are married when you get ordained...
I feel like a lot of 20-year-olds are about to make a lot of mistakes. I'm never going to get a girl anyway. I'll just go join the priesthood.
Yeah.
Not the way to do it, man.
And then if you're married and your wife dies, then you cannot marry again.
Okay.
But that opens you up to be able to become a bishop. Although that rarely happens. It is almost exclusively monks who absolutely have to be celibate who become the bishops in the Eastern churches.
Yeah.
So that's just how they've taken care of that. In the Western church, what ended up happening was everybody ignored the rules.
Just, okay, that's typical.
There were the ones who were married but wanted to become a bishop and actually knew the rule was going to be enforced, so they would abandon their wives, or more commonly, send the wife off to a convent and then go fuck prostitutes and men.
Yeah, that sounds about right. That's the church we've grown to love.
Pretty common one. As time went on, and especially distant from Rome, the main norm was priests got married. Married men became priests, which was okay at the time. Priests who weren't married would get married or have concubines or just
sleep
fuck prostitutes or sleep around. And bishops would take their wives or mistresses or harem of prostitutes with them to the cathedral, and nobody cared until 1053.
All right.
The Great Schism.
The Schism.
Where there was some... the official big problem with the Great Schism had to do with some nuance in the exact nature of the communion wafer.
Oh boy. Way to nitpick.
Yeah. Well, just like the Chalcedonian Schism was over, does Jesus have both a divine and
that's a major human nature, philosophical,
or is it a combined nature? Does he have dual natures or a single merged nature?
Uh-huh.
And yeah, so
but communion wafers.
Communion wafers, but that wasn't the only issue that was at play. There was the bishop in Rome the first among equals, or was he the boss and the other patriarchs were below him?
Oh boy.
Rome took the position that the Pope, the Bishop of Rome, was the head of the church above all others.
Head honcho.
Constantinople took the position of
nope.
The Pope is the first among equals.
Of course he would.
Willing to be second fiddle, but not second level. Then there were two other major issues about priests. Rome was adamant that priests must be clean-shaven. Constantinople was adamant that priests should have beards.
So stupid. That is so dumb. Oh my god. Okay.
And Rome was adamant that priests should not be getting married. Constantinople was like, are you a fucking idiot? To which Rome said,
yes.
No. Married men cannot be priests. They actually took it the step further. At the point of splitting, the Constantinople kept with the way it had always been, and Rome diverged.
Okay. And they went nasty, crazy. Priests have to be celibate. All priests.
It then took till the Second Lateran Council in the 1100s for the Roman Catholic Church to actually find out that virtually every priest and bishop was either legally or effectively married.
Haha, psych. There are too late. You just lost all your priests.
They spent about 100 years trying to clean that up, mostly focusing on the bishopric. And then at the Second Lateran Council decreed, no, if you are a priest and married, you cannot be a bishop. And you should either, if you were got married before you were ordained, you have to stop having sex with your wife.
That's harsh.
If you are a bishop and you are married, you are no longer a bishop. And no one who is married can become a priest.
Okay, so that all happened in the 1100s.
Yeah. Second Lateran Council.
Okay. Dicks.
By the Second Lateran Council, part of what had shaped their rationale on that, going that restrictive, was finding out how different things were everywhere that wasn't Rome.
They wanted to standardize, but they went the most conservative route?
Well, they wanted to hold, because that had basically been the standard in Rome itself.
They thought everybody else was doing this too, and then they found out, oh, no, wait, we're the only ones who are, like, celibate? Oh, crap.
Yeah, and in that time period, basically every pope was Italian.
Yeah.
They had their own kingdom. They ruled things very particularly in their kingdom and had apparently no idea what was going on.
I mean, I'd be pissed too if I found out that I had been suffering all that time only to find out everybody else was out dancing around with floozies. It's like, ah, damn it.
But they took the position that it was women leading astray the men of the church.
Of course.
That women were succubi.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just out to destroy the church.
And that misogynistic streak has stuck around forever.
So, from the 12th century on, only celibate men could be ordained as priests in the Roman Catholic Church, and no exceptions to that.
Unless you fuck little boys.
Well,
when did that come along? Shortly thereafter.
That had probably always been a thing.
Yeah,
that goes back, you know, well-documented in ancient Greece and Rome, and was standard practice throughout the Middle Ages.
Right, it was the rest of society that decided to move on.
Yes.
And determined that was wrong.
And Rome didn't want to give that up.
No, good times.
All priests were supposed to be celibate. Most continued not to be.
Because they're not insane.
They just wouldn't get legally married.
Okay.
There were still bishops and popes who were known at the time or would be found out later to be demonstrably sexually active.
I mean, often by having children.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of those.
Including into the 1800s. By the 20th century, they got a lot better at making sure there was no proof.
Right. Cover that paper trail.
In the 16th century, you get the Protestant Reformation. Martin Luther, very quickly after breaking ties with the Roman Catholic Church, took major public issue with priestly celibacy, as it was something that was actively destroying society, because it just pushes men to be homosexual, philanderers, or even worse, masturbate.
Dun, dun, dun. Oh, man. That's so funny.
Which, if you note the ranking, least bad to worst, men having sex with other men, they shouldn't be doing that. Men having sex with single women, though that's even worse. And masturbation, well, that's the worst of all. That fits with the general Catholic at that time period ranking of sex.
Okay.
The evilness of sex, because all sex was bad.
Yeah. But to prevent yourself from masturbating, you've got to at least have sex with something.
Yeah. And at that time, it was the basic ranking was, you know, the least bad was sex that could produce children. The next worse from that would be sex with a spouse with no chance of having children. And then the next worse after that would be having sex with men. Next worse than that would be having sex with a single woman who is not your wife.
Yeah, note that in the LGBTQ. Uh-huh.
And then even worse than that, prostitution was better than having sex with just a random single woman.
Okay.
And then the worst possible was masturbating.
So funny.
Yeah. So Luther took big issue with that, and he and the other top reformers all got married. Luther himself married a former nun.
Because nuns were tricked into this too.
Yes. So now I said in the Catholic Church, those have been the rules ever since. Well, as some Greek Rite churches have moved to being in communion with Rome instead of Constantinople, like the Syrian church we talked about in the War on Christmas episode.
Yeah.
They have been allowed to continue to practice things the way they've always practiced things. So the rules ended up only applying to the Latin Catholic Church, not the Greek Catholic Church.
No, that's not confusing at all.
And it definitely didn't get confusing when you got immigrant communities.
Oh, yeah.
Where you would have a Greek Rite priest who is married in New York next to a Italian priest who immigrates to New York and can't be. And in those two churches, they have, yeah, that caused some issues they had to deal with. The first relaxing of the rules came in 1960 with Vatican II. That was when they fully reaffirmed that Greek Rite churches should be doing services in, you know, in the Greek way and whatever language they want to be doing it. That's when they allowed native language services anywhere.
Okay. Stop using Latin.
And they set up a few allowances for married men in the clergy in the Latin church. The main way is for, and that was specifically coming from requests from the U.S. because they were having a hard time getting black priests in America, and they needed more.
Yeah.
So they asked Vatican II, please loosen this up a little bit.
They stopped being able to recruit.
It caused recruiting issues. So they opened up the deaconate, the permanent deacon position. Up to that point, what deacons had been in the Catholic Church was last year seminary students prior to getting ordained as priests.
Okay.
Those are now referred to as transitory deacons because it's a transitionary period. The permanent deacons can be married, but if they're married, they have to be over the age of 35. They have to go through a fair bit of training, and they exist to serve the bishop and priests. They can do everything a priest can, except for hear confession, anoint the sick. They can't lead communion. They can assist in distributing communion, but they can't do the actual blessing of it. They can't perform the magical ritual to convert the essence. And that was the issue with the Great Schism was, is it the essence that's changing or is it physically actually changing? And the Greek side was, no, it is literally actually physically flesh.
But it's not when you look at it and poke it.
But it's not.
So that's just what?
Well, at that point,
at least serve up bacon or something. I mean, Jesus.
At that point, Constantinople took the more extreme position on communion and Rome took the more extreme position on priests having sex.
There you go. Nobody can get along.
But in the with the deacons, so yeah, they can help with that. They can do baptisms and confirmations. They can do weddings, funerals. They do a lot of weddings. They also allowed at that point for married priests of other churches who convert to Catholicism to continue to be married.
Yeah, but how often does that happen?
There's a few a year.
I mean, that has to be so freaking rare for somebody to say, I'm Catholic now.
Yeah, it's
rare.
That
doesn't make sense.
Anglican to Catholic, Lutheran to Catholic. It's not often, but it does happen occasionally. A bishop from one of those other churches to convert to Catholicism can either become retired and have the effective, might retain the rank of bishop while being retired, or can take the position of a priest while being allowed to attend bishops' meetings.
Okay, that's cute, I guess. Yeah,
but not able to actually be a bishop.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's the Pope's statements about selfish couples not having enough kids. My first thought was he didn't even get the irony of what he was saying.
Mm-hmm.
And then I thought about it some more. No, he absolutely knew what he was saying, because he's been getting petitioned for a couple years now to allow married men to become priests in Brazil, because they have a severe shortage, especially in the Amazonia state.
Yeah, well, there's not a lot of people there, for one.
Mm-hmm. And he is adamantly against it.
Okay.
So, that is...
We need more priests, so go have more babies.
Yeah. The surprising thing in all of this is it is not considered dogma.
No. These are just his dementia-addled ramblings of an old crazy man.
It is officially recognized by the Catholic Church that priestly celibacy is a traditional rule that they are holding to, but are free to change at any time. That differs from
That's crazy.
Their refusal to ordain women, which is dogma.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah.
That only men can be priests. That's dogma. That only single men can be priests is tradition.
Okay.
And they acknowledge they can change it.
But they won't.
They won't, no.
No.
Well, okay. I believe eventually they will. It's going to be a long time. And what's crazy is a whole bunch of why we criticize the Catholic Church so much is because of this.
It all stems from this.
If priests didn't have to try to pretend to be celibate, they wouldn't be taking advantage of people they can control. But they can only safely have sex with people that they can control and that they can keep silent. And who's easiest for that? Altar boys.
Ugh. I'd be so nervous if I was a Catholic parent. Ugh. That's just dirty.
And why is the Catholic Church so misogynistic? Because all of the people making the decisions believe that women are succubi who are trying to take away God's gift of celibacy / gay orgies / fucking altar boys.
Cocaine-fueled.
Yes, especially cocaine-fueled.
Especially.
Yeah.
It's a God-given right.
Yeah, and like, you know, that we had a story a couple years ago we covered about it was a couple bishops and a bunch of priests, like 30 Vatican priests having a cocaine-fueled gay orgy at an apartment they secretly had just a couple blocks away from the Vatican City.
Yeah.
And they were being really noisy, and the cops busted them and arrested them for the cocaine.
Yeah, busted. I mean, this happens all the time.
Yeah.
That wasn't a one-off.
No. Martin Luther talked about it because he was a former monk.
He knew about it.
He knew how it all worked.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's where it came from. there's a good reason the Orthodox churches haven't followed suit. And every Protestant denomination dropped those rules as soon as they could.
Yeah.
We have feedback. We got two corrections from Danielle with timestamps.
Gotta love those timestamps.
For last week's episode.
All right. Hit me.
At 3 minutes, 19 seconds, King Henry VIII did have one living female child with his first wife, Catherine of Aragon. But she was unable to provide him with a living male heir. He wanted an annulment based on the grounds that she had been briefly married to his brother, the previous king, which made her his sister by marriage, therefore incest. The Pope disagreed, so Henry separated the English church from Rome.
Here we go.
Yes, that is absolutely true.
Incorrectly said that he had had, that was not able to produce an heir.
Yes.
Or was not able to produce children, not an heir. Gotcha.
That daughter was queen. That was Queen Mary, who succeeded him. Well, okay. His son, he did have one son who survived, but died very young. And his two sisters that survived followed him. Which then gets to the next correction. At 5 minutes 46 seconds, after Protestant Queen Elizabeth I died, she was succeeded by Protestant James I/IV and his wife Anne of Denmark, who may have been secretly Catholic, but was still coronated alongside her husband. James was succeeded by his Protestant son, Charles I, who then married a Catholic, Henrietta Maria of France.
Okay.
Yes. I was not trying to get into the English Reformation much in that one. but yes, I made some goofs, and I'm sorry.
Aw.
But yeah, the switching back and forth in religion in England, Henry separated from Rome, and then when Mary became queen, she was Catholic. She took the England back to Catholic, and then Elizabeth became queen and took England back to Protestant. And then James became king. And
would have hated to have sat in on one of those family dinners.
Kept it Protestant, and then Charles I was, okay, that was all fine. And then Charles II was Catholic, and so the English Civil War and...
Et cetera. Yeah, fun. Thank you for sending those in.
Yes, I like getting corrections in.
Yes, it's good stuff.
Yep. All right, so that's it for this week. Lauren, thank you.
Thank you.
And listeners, remember, not all those who wander are lost.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Atheist Nomads. You can find show notes and contact information at atheistnomads.com. Follow us on Twitter at Atheist Nomads. And like us on Facebook at facebook.com/atheistnomads. Please subscribe to the show in iTunes, Stitcher, or your podcatcher of choice. And while you're there, feel free to leave us a review. Theme music is courtesy of Sturdy Fred. Until next time, this has been the Atheist Nomads.